Hello, and welcome to the Common Geeking Program. This is one of our interlude episodes in between, like, you know, the real meaty stuff. It's like a layer in a sandwich that's bread, because it's a club sandwich.
Wait, what?
And we're a club.
Okay, so this episode is the meat. What's the bread?
No. This is between the bread of the, like, different layers of the club sandwiches.
Oh. Well, we're going to have a lot of these interludes, so this is going to be a meat-heavy sandwich.
Okay, so instead of bread, we're using, like, crepes. None of us have a culinary arts background, so it's just what you can expect.
Listen, I just got a breakfast burrito maker for Christmas, so that tells you what people think of my culinary skills.
I'm Austin, and I'm here with Colin, and today we're going to be talking about The Adventure Zone.
The Adventure Zone!
By the McElroy brothers and dad.
This is a follow-up to episode 31 of our podcast, Keenan on Top, where we talked about The Adventure Zone, as well as some other things about collaborative gaming. But since then, The Adventure Zone has had a lot of developments, and we kind of wanted to talk about the changes.
Yeah, and, you know, since for that episode, I only had people listen to, like, the first arc of The Adventure Zone, and most of them didn't even get that far because they're a bunch of fucking hooligans. So, you know.
And at this point, Austin and I are both 100% up to date.
Oh, yeah.
And man, am I excited about what's coming in the future. But do I hear church bells?
No, that's a grandmother clock.
That's interesting because I've been listening to the 11th hour arc all day. So it's all about chiming clocks. We'll get to that. I think it is fair to say we are going to have to sound the spoiler alert.
Spoilers!
We're going to try not to, like, discuss explicit story items, but we are going to be talking about things that may spoil parts of The Adventure Zone if you haven't listened. But if you don't care, who cares?
So don't go beyond this point.
But what if they pause before this point? They're now lacking instruction.
I mean, yeah, but if they can't figure it out, I don't...
We need to be completely clear.
Care.
Anybody who is not listening at this point, please tweet directly at us to tell us you're not listening anymore so that we can follow up with you on further instruction.
We pride ourselves on our personable... No, that's bullshit. Anyway, though.
Let's jump right in.
Yeah. So, first we were going to talk about it as collaborative gaming, since I don't think we really got to do... I don't think I was satisfied with the end of our discussion last time, because what we had to compare The Adventure Zone to as far as collaborative gaming was not... I don't know. It wasn't quite...
We got one collaborative game. I talked about Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, which is a couch co-op.
Yeah, I'll give you that one.
But then the other things were Mario Kart and League of Legends. And those are a bit of a stretch. Bit more than I think we were looking for.
Well, I mean, ideally, there's collaboration.
But not in the sense you mean with this game.
No.
Because, I mean, you've got the three McElroy brothers, and then you got the dad.
Dadleroy.
And, like, they're combative, but generally, Justin, Travis, and Clint do a pretty good job of being a team.
Yeah.
And half the conversations we had were about people not being good at teams. So...
I don't know. I feel like a lot of it seems so particular to their campaign, because their campaign wasn't just a D&D campaign. It was also, like, entertainment.
Yeah.
So they had, like, audience interaction with the Fantasy Costco, where all your dreams come true. You can put that sound effect into that if you have the time. I don't know.
They had, the user submitted items. They had user names. But I'll say after our episode 31, I went to work in Texas for a couple weeks where I was just repairing things for like 2 weeks straight. So I had Adventure Zone like on blast in my ears for two straight weeks. So I'm fuzzy on some of the details. But to me, it was, as someone who doesn't play a lot of D&D, I had a lot of fun getting to see, like, these people develop not just strategies, but also, I will generously say, cooperative behaviors. Things like, hey, Magnus rushes in. Okay, now Merle has to chase him down. And Taco stands back going like, I don't care about any of this.
Yeah.
Or when, you know, Merle and Magnus are in the middle of a fight and Taco is on a hill, what, like with a sandwich or something like that? I can't remember the
specifics. He wasn't on a hill. He was just outside of the tiny city. Like, there was this machine that shrank them down, and then they went into the city that was in this glass thing, and he was just sitting outside looking in, like, not about it.
And it is interesting to see the concessions that they had to make for the sake of being an entertainment show. Just to kind of get in the headspace for this, I was listening to one of the story arcs, The 11th Hour, all day, and at one point they go through a puzzle where they have to open a bunch of lockers, and then they get into an elevator, and and then Griffin, the dungeon master, says there was going to be a puzzle here, but I don't think you guys are going to solve it very fast, so I'm just going to skip it.
Yeah, I mean, time constraints are real, though. The DM might even do that in, like, a normal campaign, just because, like, you know, if you've been going for a couple hours and the session needs to get wrapped up, you mm-hmm. can be like, oh, you know what, I'll just expedite this. They don't need this other roadblock.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I've only played one D&D campaign ever. I feel you've done a lot more tabletop role-playing than I have. How does that, like, how does what I've heard in the show compare to maybe your experience either as a player or a GM?
Most of the time I've been a player character, which mm-hmm. is nice because I don't have to get stressed out by all the other player characters all the time. I've done a little bit of DMing, but my campaigns never got really far just because people don't have time. But mm-hmm. I don't know, I think that, like, what they show us from their games is, like, pretty, it seems like kind of optimal campaign stuff, even though, you know, they do hide things, like, you know, Griffin talks in some of the Adventure Zone zone
the episodes. Podcast about the Adventure
yeah
Zone.
Yes, but I said it right.
Yes,
so
you
it's
did.
Fine, we'll fix it in post.
That's fine.
He talks about times where he had to change the campaign because of decisions they made, and how that, you know, that can be stressful for a DM, but it can also work out nicely because, like, the arcs that they had were all satisfying, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though I liked some of them more than others, and I'm sure they were satisfying from a gameplay perspective because I think, you know, they got kind of attached to their characters, even though Justin started his as a joke.
Yeah.
And,
Taco.
Clint couldn't even remember his character voice.
Even that they're still doing live episodes as those characters.
Yeah, I love it.
And the most recent character, the most recent live episode as of this airing, which we're recording this day after Christmas, 2017.
Yeah.
Justin slipped out of his character voice, and then Clint called him on it, and, like, the crowd was, like, really just making
going
Justin
wild.
Eat it after Justin bitched at them for 3 years about not doing character voices. But I don't know, I'd be curious to play a game like that where the stress is not just on completing the game.
Yeah, I mean,
but servicing others, which, I mean, like, I guess, you know, let's play videos and things like that, but this seems so much more orchestrated.
Oh, Colin, I'll tell you about servicing others.
No. Oh, so I know that wasn't super in-depth, but I think, is that a good spot to leave off for collaborative gaming and go to storytelling?
I think so. I mean, because I think that's also kind of a nice segue, because what are we doing in the service of others, you know?
That's fair.
Yeah, like, the point of the game is not just to, like, complete an objective or, like, complete a hard objective, like beating the evil guy or, you know, defending your towers or destroying your enemies, mm-hmm. or even just, like, creating hell on earth.
Yeah.
That's Mario Kart Double Dash.
That's Mario Kart Double Dash.
I mean, because some people can play D&D in a more, like, competitive, let's see how far we get into the dungeon way, or let's see how quickly we can get past this obstacle way. And that's how, like, D&D, the original D&D game was designed. It's around, like, a very different set of gameplay assumptions from what they're pushing in D&D 5e.
Mm-hmm.
5e is much more about, like, you know, telling a story and having everyone, like, either pilot a character or move around parts of this world and be the puppet master. And then, like, you know, have some kind of sense of verisimilitude to what's going on, but also all the fantasy that you want in your dreams, I guess.
Yep.
Depending on your dreams and your desires.
That is, like, that's the best way I could have imagined saying it. Well done. Well put.
Oh, thanks.
Well, and I mean, the thing that interests me is I haven't done a lot with, like, I don't know, I've gamed my whole life, but I started playing like RPGs of any kind pretty late in life, relatively. That was not like my cornerstone. That was some Sonic the Hedgehog, Cernhog the Hedgecorn stuff when I was a kid. But the interesting thing about D&D is always, you know, you have some, or any tabletop role-playing game, is you have, you know, like base sets that tell you, you know, they set the stage, they design a campaign, set obstacles for people. But for almost every arc in this 69-episode story, Griffin McElroy wrote every single arc and, like, had to build it. And for me, the storytelling interest comes from the idea of him as a writer having to write a story and then having people being able to upend that story completely.
Yeah, characters who don't always cooperate.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess for the sake of any sort of structure to this conversation we're having, the series in what's called its balance arc, the first 69 episodes, you have Here There Be Gerblins, which we talked about in our episode, and you have an arc called Moonlighting, which is an interlude, Murder on the Rockport Limited, which is like a train heist, Pedals to the Metal, which is Mad Max, basically. Then you have The Crystal Kingdom. How would you describe The Crystal Kingdom? Because that one I'm squiffy on.
I would say that The Crystal Kingdom is kind of like, I think it is the closest thing to like a classic D&D like dungeon campaign that they have. Mm. But what would I, like, I don't know what I would compare it to.
Yeah.
As far as other media goes.
I guess Griffin mentioned that he thought of it while watching Alien, so that might, yeah, that might, yeah, be why it seems like a tight dungeon. After that you have the 11th Hour. I will explain why that's my favorite later, but that's got a Majora's Mask style time loop. After that is the Suffering Game, which is like an evil carnival gauntlet thing. It was very, I was listening to that while I was in the airport in Texas, and I was very sad.
Oh, yeah.
I think the biggest development that happened since we did our last episode was the Stolen Century.
Yeah.
Which is basically the final story arc, aside from Story and Song. And I think it's around the arc of the Crystal Kingdom where I started to feel like this show got a lot more sophisticated, where they weren't just playing D&D and Griffin had like a master plan.
Yeah.
Which he may have said that at some point, I don't know, but that's when it really clicked to me that this is being written and he is.
Yeah. I mean, that's where he started making up more hints about the Red Robes and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, and he also brought in like this story, like this, the idea that what's going on has divine implications. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just people looking for treasure. This is fucking up with Merle's ability to talk to his god.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot. He got totally cut off from his god Pan.
Griffin kept apologizing to him throughout the entire arc because he just couldn't do things.
He basically took away like half his skills, so he can't do anything. And that's also when he got his spoiler alert.
Spoilers.
Got his arm chopped off.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Rough times. Pretty cool though.
Yeah. It was at that point though where I finally started as a listener being like, actually curious about where it was going to go. Until that point, like, Murder on the Rockport Limited was my favorite until the 11th Hour, because it was just a funny train heist. But that was funny to me because of Taco.
Yeah,
and Taco trying to steal everything.
Yeah, that's a good one, honestly. Oh my god. I think we're getting into favorites a little bit. We can switch around the order here. But, like, honestly, though, I think my favorite my favorite arc there was probably it's probably still Pedals to the Metal, just because, like, I don't know, I think at that point, like, for the first time, I was actually like scared that the characters were going to die, and it was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna care about these people. Mm-hmm. And it also had like that really nice, it brought in the characters of the thief and the constable ladies.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert again.
Spoilers.
Don't fucking listen to me. I thought it was really nice when they came back at the end, because, like, it wasn't, like, it was kind of a satisfying story from a certain perspective at the end when they were, like, they turned into the tree that was hugging. But, like, a lot of people have made different complaints about some of the things that the McElroy brothers have done, and they've listened to that and they've been like, yeah, I mean, we could have done some better stuff. Like, you know, they didn't mean to have like their first woman romantic relationship in the first, like, in their show.
Oh,
like, they
yeah
made that, and then
have
yeah
both
and
queer then characters die basically.
Yep, away, before like before anyone really thought about the sexualities of the player characters or anything. And you know, they were just like, oh, this is kind of the story that I'm writing. And then, you know, it's flexible though, because
it is.
Everything is created.
The flexibility frame. Definitely came to a bit of a disservice. And I'll also talk about Pedals to the Metal. Pedals to the Metal, spelled P-E-T-A-L-S, because it starts with basically a series of, like, they're going through a building and, like, through an elevator shaft, and there are all these plants. Like, one of the necromancer people they're fighting against controls all these plants. That's where you first hear Clint McElroy, the dad, as Merle, sexually seduce a plant. And the next half of it basically feels like Mad Max, or like a Ben-Hur-style chariot race, where everybody's on these vehicles, and the imagery you got from them having to, like, you know, jump from vehicle to vehicle, or summoning Geralt.
A bunch of absolutely absurd vehicles, too. Like, you had the goblins in, like, a rocket ship that just was on wheels. Yeah. And then you had this one that was, like, this huge fishbowl that had this octopus in it of improbable size.
But. And I think the issue I took with that arc was the, and this probably wasn't how it was planned, but the stuff in the beginning, the stuff in the building, it took so long to get into it. And that's probably not because the story was written that way, but because there was probably a lot more room for interaction in that area of the story than Griffin intended when he wrote it. And then Justin, Travis, and Merle got really involved in it, so that prolonged it. So Pedals to the Metal, to me, I wanted more of the car stuff, but that was relatively short. So for me, the pacing was all off, but, like, how are you going to write for other people to do that? That's so hard.
I don't know.
Especially when it's D&D and not, like, a video game where you construct the engine the world runs on.
Yeah, and you can't just realistically pretend that when you keep talking to someone, they're just going to repeat themselves until you get bored and decide, I'm going to go do something else. It's just not right.
I guess switching to maybe why I like the 11th hour so much, and why I think it's probably the biggest success of the podcast is, it's a story arc where they enter a town and they have to figure out, like, how to get this relic at the center of the town, but an hour in, everything blows up and they die, and then they have to do it all over again. And they basically...
Yeah, they get reset.
They get caught in a time loop. And I am a little sad for anybody listening to this before they listen to The Adventure Zone, because the moment when all that comes together was, like, so revelatory and exciting to me as a listener.
Yeah.
But it paved the way for, like, 9 episodes of... Even though it was the same area, they came up with a lot of good mechanics to make sure that they weren't repeating things. And they made sure that it also freed things up, because every time resets, their skills and their spell slots reset. So they can be casting spells much more frequently.
And they can try a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And they explore all parts of the town at, like, in the same hour. Mm-hmm. Like, they know what you figure out what's going on in this huge place.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I thought the end of that arc was super fun too. Like, just you know, just because of all of the like, you see even more how much import their quest has to the world that Griffin's making.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to, like, spoil everything that we know, just because, like, I don't know. It's for the people who have listened. It's just like, yeah, I heard this before. But then for everyone else, it's just like, I mean, you made a mistake coming this far if you're one of these people. But yeah, you know, I want to try to keep this to a minimum,
the value,
you know,
of our conversation is seriously contingent on a cursory understanding. I'm assuming these people have at least listened to our episode 31, but a much larger group of people listen to Taz than listen to,
I hope so,
CGP. Man, they deserve,
well,
to be.
I mean, but I hope everyone who listens to us has listened to Taz, because, like, I think the McElroy brothers are fucking amazing. I don't know. And father.
I guess the wrap up of what they called the balance arc, all those titles I read off, was, well, you had the Stolen Century, which I don't really want to talk about, but then Story and Song.
Yeah. Well, Stolen Century, we can talk a little bit about it, you know, like, it gave the background to all the characters that we needed.
Yeah.
It tied everything together. It told us how everything could have happened and why all these characters are in this world when, you know, they're from some other world in the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
Shit's crazy.
Yeah.
We got quantum entanglement and shit going on here, and people are concerned about the Mexican food.
And the actual finale of Story and Song basically, you know, finally reveals the inciting incident and the, you know, the source of conflict through all of the podcast up to that point, and had, I think, a very fun, like, final encounter, but also a lot of very emotional conclusions. I remember listening to some of the final things Magnus said while I was playing Destiny.
Oh, yep.
I was just listening while I was playing games, and I got, like, real misty. And now there's one tree in Destiny 2 that I associate with getting emotional about Magnus Burnside's.
When he, like, the flash forward with Magnus, or...
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That, when he says Magnus rushes in and then it interludes out. That's about as far away from a spoiler as I could get. But I was super impressed with their growth from let's play a game to let's tell a meaningful story. And now that story is over. If you have 70 hours to listen to it, you should listen to it.
There'll be 70 hours so well spent.
But wait,
there's more than that. So right now, they're in the brothers and father are in a sort of an interlude between like longer story arcs that they're gonna do in game. They're not gonna, as they've told us already, they're not gonna be using D&D for everything. And so I hope that this little conversation that we're about to have is going to persuade you if you dropped off after the balance arc, or if you just sort of never finished the balance arc, to like fucking get through that, because that was awesome. And now listen to this shit, because this is gonna be kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's gonna be the best. Who knows? It's a new thing every like 4 or 5 episodes. It's crazy.
Yeah. Clint McElroy, no longer Merle Highchurch, started a mini arc. I think it was 4 episodes and a prelude episode called Commitment, which was like a superhero story set in like an alt America.
A very dad thing.
Lots of Bible jokes in there too. You can tell that they were at least at one point a very pious family of McElroys. But the big thing that, Austin, you can talk way more about this than I can, is like you said, they're not using D&D. They're using a system called Fate. I am unable to define this, so if you can help me at all, what is the Fate role playing system?
I don't know all the ins and outs of Fate, because I've only ever looked at it in like a cursory way. I never got to play any games on it, but it's supposedly kind of streamlined in a different way from how any of the D&D systems have been like streamlined, which is really just all of them have some kind of streamlining except for 3.5, which was an unholy shit show, which was great to play once you learned all the rules, but it took so long to learn all the rules, and no one was ever going to learn the grappling rules anyway, so...
I'm going to take your word for all this.
Yeah, it's okay. It was stupid.
My perception is pretty low. Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, so in Fate, you have a couple of stats. You have some mental... you have like certain abilities that your character can do, but you don't have like, not everyone just like makes,
it's like, not like
specific.
It's not like roll 20 against AC, roll 10 for perception. You know, it seems a little more abstract.
Yeah. You just use 6-sided dice and you add a number, which is just your stat. You don't have to like add up numbers and then subtract a number and then find your modifier. And then that's what actually gets added to your rolls. You just have numbers that go together. It's simple addition. But also, mm-hmm. most of the game, rather than saying I'm going to roll to do this, it's designed such that like all of your interactions and rather than saying
Austin,
I want to roll to do this
here.
No, I made a bunch of noises with my headset, so I'm
going
to say that.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm just looking ahead to
I thank
your,
you as the
editing.
Future editor of this episode.
Okay, yeah. So rather than rolling and saying, I want to do this, I'm going to roll this stat, it seems like the Fate system uses more like of a, it uses a dialectic sort of like framework for everything, where you say, my character is going to try to do this, or like I'm gonna walk up and talk to this person, and then they hash out like an issue, or if you're fighting someone, you say, I'm gonna do this, and then you can invoke different like different attributes of your character or of other characters, which you can use to your advantage. Yeah. And then everyone sort of negotiates the outcome of that through like die rolls and other effects that they can add on.
So how did you think that affected maybe your enjoyment of those four people telling a new story? Was how do you think that more dialogue and personality based system changed things?
I really enjoyed it, honestly. Even though I don't think they were satisfied with it as like a storytelling device for them. I think that what it does is when they have to negotiate like these various actions that they're taking, a lot of the time they have to explain like why they would be able to do a certain thing. And it has a lot to do with their characters' mental states and like the physical states of them and the relationship to their environment. So I think we get like a lot more characterization that isn't necessarily bound up in just what the character says and does, because they'll explain, actually, I think that my guy's feeling pretty great right now, so he's gonna try to talk to this person and just persuade them to let him do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
And you say like, oh, I see, that's, you get to see the character's thought processes instead of just inferring it from what someone says. And I think that's kind of cool, but I can also see how like someone else might be like, no, I just want to like see the outcome. I don't want to deal with rules lawyering.
I came at it more from that side.
Yeah.
I enjoyed commitment, but I will say that I think that the world that Clint painted is not really what sucked me in.
Yeah.
I was actually sucked out a lot because the last episode was again like all Bible humor, which I'm very familiar with, but like it's not what I'm looking for. The thing that I think really drew me through was the new trio of characters played by the brothers.
I think they did really well designing the characters with the system that they were given.
Particularly, and I think you share my opinion on this, the character of Cardala, played by Justin, was just
Irene and Cardala.
Everything I wanted. He drew from Inuit mythology to create this like goddess that took over Irene's body. And it was a lot of like that fish out of water humor, but he played it with such confidence that even if you don't like the change in the fate system, you will get some serious laughs out of this.
Travis does some good stuff. And also it was fun to see all of the people playing a different type of character.
Yeah.
Like
Travis was reserved. Griffin wasn't a dungeon master.
Yeah.
Clint and, had to do character voices the whole time.
That was and you know, Travis wasn't rushing in all the time without like being fully prepared for it. He was just, he either had the power or he was not like that. It was interesting to see him do two people, really. We got to see way more Cardala, and I like it that way, but
yeah, I think Cardala should have her own show at this point. I could watch a sitcom of Justin McElroy as Irene and Cardala sharing an apartment together and like a 4-camera live studio audience set up on CBS. I'd watch
No, you know what it is? They tape it like it's a one-man show, right? So you just have Travis in the middle there doing things, and it's an empty auditorium, except there's Clint in the middle of it, and all of the noises that he makes are just like multiplied by a fuck ton of times.
Just stacking Clint on Clint for a shitty laugh track.
Also, they made an announcement recently. Griffin, our no longer DM, told us that the Adventure Zone is going to be going weekly for the rest of this intermediate arc between, this intermediate series of small arcs between between Balance and the next big thing.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
So Commitment was like a mini story. I guess we're going to get one of those where each of the four people hosts something or DMs something, but then we're getting what they're calling Season 2. Given that Balance was Season 1 and it lasted 3 years, I'm kind of wondering.
I'm excited.
I'm very excited for this, though I did binge most of Season 1 and now I actually have to wait.
Yeah, it's rough.
It's real
especially
rough.
Since I realized that all of the bi-weekly podcasts that I listen to come out on the same week. So I have like an empty week and it kills me.
That's what happens with me and my roommate. We both get paid bi-weekly, but it's the same week. So we starve every once in a while. It's fine. But yeah, in some of these future arcs, I want to ask, what are you hoping to see either out of one of these mini arcs or out of the nukes the next season? What is it about Taz that you like so much?
Well, I think honestly, it's this is my dead horse, and I'm just gonna keep beating it. I really enjoyed, I really enjoyed the extensive world building that they got to do in Taz, and I'm just a sucker for fantasy. Even like the super wacky shit that they do, it just reminds me of like some of my favorite authors and some shit that they've done that seems like just super weird and not like high fantasy, but like it's really, in some senses, I think it's more meaningful than a lot of high fantasy that takes itself too seriously.
That's fair. That coming from the Tolkien expert.
Yeah, but also Tolkien, because like as opposed to a lot of other high fantasy stuff that's like based on Tolkien, but I think misses the point of Tolkien. Mm. Tolkien is great just because he's like, it's actually about friendship saving the world. That's fair. Kind of a nice thing. Yeah. We don't need to keep going on that for a while.
I'll say I have a very different hope for this show. Both for Stolen Century and Commitment, I think my issue was I sort of didn't like how loosey-goosey some of the systems were. I'm one of those people who like I like listening to the nitty-gritty mechanics of D&D. I like them having to balance the die rolls, either getting numbers that put them in an unexpected situation or dash all their hopes and dreams.
Yeah,
I want more of that. I want more of them rolling the dice, and we might not get it, and that's okay. I still like listening to them. But like the moment when they came out with an item that lets you lie to a merchant and then Justin bought it and then immediately sold it back to Griffin to get Griffin's most expensive item. Just like that's like a little quirk in game logic. It's like finding the bugs. It's exploiting the system.
Yeah.
And I think that by having a more intricate system, you get more of that creativity rather than everybody trying to pull a story in a different direction.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's also like, you know, the one of the nice things about Roll20 D&D stuff is that, systems with a bunch of different dice that you have to roll all the time and you get confused is that it makes you improvise stuff.
Yeah.
And that it brings the laughs.
Yeah, for sure. And thankfully, all their live shows that they've announced are going to be the original trio from Balance called Trace Horny Boys.
Yeah, so they're not going away forever.
Yeah, and the most recent one we got was a lot of fun. So I'm glad to get more of that.
So that was interlude 4 of the Common Geeking program with Austin Liebers, me, and
Colin Ketchin. Yay!
So we'll have a couple more of these episodes, right?
I think we have a couple more follow-ups. We have a very fun special project I'm working on before we transition into our new cycle where we've made some changes. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, these interludes are just really fun to chuck together. If you want to listen to The Adventure Zone, it's on every podcast thing you can imagine, and their home is MaximumFun.org. I listen to a lot of shows from them.
Or you could go to McElroy Brothers shows or
McElroyShows.com.
Yeah.
Absolutely worth your time. If you listen to podcasts and don't listen to Taz, then I don't think you listen to podcasts.
I mean, if you listen to like comedy podcasts at all and you haven't heard of the McElroy Brothers, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty monolithic at this point. But yeah, that's us. If you wanted to, you know, learn more about our show, we have a website that we're working on updating, commongeekingprogram.com. We're going to try to be more active on Facebook and Twitter at Geeking Program. If you want to talk to me, and I love talking to people online and not in person.
It's how we do.
You can find me basically on every platform as Sonic Colin K, which is spelled like Sonic O Link.
Yeah.
Xbox,
and
YouTube.
That's how you should say it.
Not Sonic O Link. Twitter, Facebook, Xbox, YouTube, SoundCloud, everything. That's where I am. Austin is a hermit in that regard and shan't be providing you his online credentials.
No, I don't do Twitter.
But if you do want to reach us directly, contact at Geeking Program or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com, and that we can all see that. Or leave us a review online on Apple Podcasts. We like that too.
Which is real nice, yeah.
Super helpful. And maybe Austin will read it out to you and you'll know, hey, I got through to him. I made it.
I'm sick. We're done. It's all good.
Thank you guys for listening.
Have a lovely life.
This Common Geeking Program interlude stars Austin Liebers and Colin Ketchin talking about the podcast The Adventure Zone as a follow-up to episode 31 of CGP, Keenan on Top.
The podcast is sponsored by Clicky Pens, Austin's favorite tool to enhance recording quality. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Colin Ketchin, featuring original music by me. Now, next week we have one more follow-up and a couple surprises before we kick off the new cycle here in the new year. We're going to tell you all about the changes that are coming up, but for now, thank you for listening to this.
Can you wiggle your phone around? Because right now you're in portrait, so you're sideways on my iPad.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Just,
yeah. I've got my cord coming out of the other end of the phone.
Now you're just upside down. Like, yeah. I just need your phone's orientation to rotate. And I don't know why it's not doing it.
Oh, that's not right.
No.
Well, the thing is that I definitely, like, it's on, it's not locked.
Yeah, well, so. Here, just turn it sideways again, and it should.
Should it, though?
God, you know what? I guess I'll just deal with sideways Austin. This is fine.
You can turn I'll your phone fine. Sideways.
It's my lock it. It's my iPad. Oh, okay. But then, well, here, wait. Okay, let's...
Lock it and turn it.
No! Oh my god, I need to show you what happened. I'm taking a screenshot of this. All right, here's the after, and then I'll take the before right now. So, that didn't go as planned. It's fine. I'll just live with sideways Austin.